the Senate Education Committee will come to order. I believe we have a quorum, even though we may not be taking any votes today. Appreciate your being here and attempting to be here for a start on time. You have the agenda, and I'm inserting one more item ahead of the printed agenda, and that is our staff, Anne-Marie Butler, has put together the little grid, the matrix, showing the non-public, public, and private data and data sharing agreements with some definitions to understand what we have in current statute relative to data requirements as kind of a foundation for the presentations we're going to hear today. Anne-Marie?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, so if you pull out the table, it says classifications of various data on the top, and you basically read it from top down. So then obviously the columns, and I put the definitions at the bottom for each of the columns, but to kind of help you out, the difference between, or at least where I was confused, the difference between non-public and private data. Non-public is typically data that's not on individuals, versus private data is data on individuals. So that's kind of the distinction there. And then there's obviously the column at the very end, which is the data sharing agreements that I was aware of. And there are three of them. One is with MDE and the Office of Higher Education, and that's often talked about with the longitudinal data, so tracking or getting information about kids from P through 20. Then there's also two other sharing agreements between, one between MDE and the Board of Teaching, and then another one between MDE and the Board of School Administrators. And I think that's trying to improve those professional education programs. And just also just to let you know, I also try to put in citations, so if people want to go look at the statutes where some of these classifications are available.
Are there any questions that you might have of Anne-Marie before we proceed?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you. For the summary data for value-added assessment, would that be on the department's website?
Madam Chair and Senator Wieger, I think that information would be on the website. I think it depends on what part of the report of the value-added part that you want to know about. But I think that comment is also really looking at summary data on teachers that are is generated by that value-added model, and I think that would be available, but just not the data on individual teachers.
Okay, we're pleased to have with us today from the Department of Education, working with Data Systems, Kathy Wagner, who's the Information Technologies Director, along with Amy Gadara, who is the Executive Director for the Data Quality Campaign. So we're going to get kind of a state and national perspective on the efforts to improve the quality of data that's available for decision-making in education. Kathy, I'll let you start.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. We decided that Amy and I are going to each take about 20 minutes and go through our respective presentations and then answer questions jointly. We did a similar presentation this morning in the House, and a lot of the questions really were kind of back and forth between state issues and national issues. So I'm going to go through this as quickly as I can, I guess. Thank you. We have, I don't know if you're aware of this, we have a second longitudinal data systems grant. Our data systems grants are, of course, federal. They come through the Institute of Education Sciences. Our first grant we got in 2006 for $3.3 million, and that enabled us to begin building our K-12 longitudinal data warehouse. We got pretty far with that grant. We established, I think, a strategic direction that we are continuing to work with and expand with our second data grant. So this past July, we received a $12.4 million data grant, so quite a bit more funding. But the work that we have envisioned is also pretty significant. So we have, of course, a grand vision to transform the education data systems in the state, and we have three primary goals that we think are essential to that transformation. Underneath those primary goals, we've identified seven specific projects that have very specific deliverables. So we're being very tight-reined with the project here so that we can use the funds wisely and invest in the state's infrastructure. So my first slide of I got the computer to work. I'm sorry. My first slide talks about the vision. So, again, we are building and expanding upon the work done with our first data systems grant. Our goal is to transition our data capacity to something called a fully interoperable enterprise-level data collection. Whenever I use the word enterprise data collections with non-techie types, everybody thinks about the Star Trek movie, so we're not talking about Star Trek here. What enterprise means in this context is data systems and data elements that transcend a particular purpose or a particular program area. At MDE, we have a history of every time we need a data set for a particular program, we have that program begin to or create a data collection system. And so we may be, in fact, collecting the same elements multiple times because different programs need them. So our goal here is to collect any given data element one time and use it many times. You'll see that illustrated in a couple of the data models and in some of the projects that we have going. We also envision data sharing across state agencies. So this is a big difference from our first data grant. We're going to be working very closely with the Office of Higher Education, DEED, and the Office of Enterprise Technology. Our goal is to establish links from preschool data to K-12 data to post-secondary data and out to the workforce so that we can answer and view some of the salient questions that are coming up in education research to better inform practice. So our first system goal is to upgrade our existing MDE data collections. And you may or may not be aware, some of our collection systems are pretty old, and that's fairly typical in state government. Data collection systems aren't real sexy, so they don't get the funding. I have to admit when I do this talk that I actually have Bose speakers from the 1970s, so I also do have old electronics. But I think that's probably not the way we want to go with our data system. So we're going to be investing some of this money, quite a bit of this money, into upgrading what are our core pillars of data for education. And so that would be student data collection, staff data collection, and organization data collection. Those are the three things that really are the hallmarks of our business. We are doing this to incorporate elements, data elements, and timelines that are outlined in federal legislation, the America Competes Act. But interestingly, we also have state legislation that overlays and intersects with those requirements. Our goal is for districts to report what we call linkable data. So we want to get teacher data that we can link to student data, that we can link to course-taking data and organizational data. And that's a little bit of a new concept for us. We're doing that through enterprise-level data collection systems, and all of these data will be stored in the K-12 longitudinal warehouse that we actually built with our first data grant. So the purpose of this goal is get better data systems, expand our data capacity, but keep it in the same warehouse. That's interesting or important to juxtapose against our second goal, which is to build a second data warehouse. Now, this is a new data warehouse that will be housed at the Office of Enterprise Technology, and it's going to contain interagency data. So it'll contain some selected elements from K-12. It'll contain some elements from post-secondary, and we'll get those through the Office of Enterprise Technology, and we hope to get the data sharing agreements in place to get some elements from workforce. So that will allow us to do do research, starting with kids in preschool, taking them through K-12 experience, looking at how well they persist and graduate from post-secondary, and how they end up being successful in the workplace.
Madam Chair.
Senator, Senator Daley, apologies. You surprised me. We were going to wait on questions, so sorry about that.
I quickly looked through the presentation, and I didn't see the answer anywhere. So I just wanted to ask a question because I keep thinking about it as she's talking. Are there any consulting firms that are doing this along with you, or is it just state employees? And what system, what's is it Oracle, or is it, what is the box, all this data, what is it that you're using?
Madam Chair, Senator Daley, we are doing a lot of this with what we call staff augmentation contracts off of the master roster. That's a procurement process specific to IT. We have in-house an architecture team and a lead data architect, and so we have built our warehouse with in-house expertise. Our security system, and I'm going to talk a lot about security here, is Oracle Identity Management. That was just purchased as the state security system by OET. It is single sign-on, and its security is really important when we talk about expanding data out to interagency or even the kind of data sharing that we're doing just with normal K-12 business. So to answer your question, we are a SQL Java shop, and we are using staff augmentation and state employees to do this. But then we have two primary products, Oracle Identity Management, and with our first data grant, we purchased a business intelligence tool called Web Focus that will allow us to create a lot of, we call them dashboards, but better web displays for data. We bought the tool with the first grant, but we didn't have a lot of money to implement it and train our staff to use it to its full advantage, so we're spending a lot of money this time to exploit that tool as well.
Are the consultants like Booz Allen or Deloitte folks? Or?
They are, I think we have Dahl, we have SDK, trying to think off the top of my head. I think we're just about ready to finalize a contract with iBusiness Solutions. So we've targeted various groups for particular expertise. iBusiness Solutions is a vendor that's going to be working with us who has expertise with MinSKU data sets, exactly the kind of warehouse that we're talking about building here. One of the tricks here, of course, we're going to talk about this from a technical perspective, but a lot of these things have been done technically. What we need to have is people who have expertise in the business side. So we targeted a vendor who had expertise with post-secondary data. So we've been selective in how we target vendors. And Information Builders is the vendor for our Web Focus product. So we have kind of a variety depending on which of the products we're targeting.
Thank you.
Okay, so our goal B, our system improvement goal B, as I said, is to make a P20 warehouse. That will not be housed at MDE. That will be housed at the Office of Enterprise Technology. They're building a state-of-the-art data center. They also have expertise in doing something called service level agreements. Service level agreements help us negotiate how we're going to behave around data, who gets to see it, under what conditions, how long you can have data live, when it has to be destroyed. So we're leveraging their expertise for this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Stephen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just clarify for me, please, what P means? I mean, I know it's preschool, but does it start with, like, their a three-year-old's assessment when they go to get assessed at the school district or ECFE, or where do you get that P data from?
Madam Chair, Senator Stephen. P means preschool, but we are defining the P, actually, today. We've been having a couple of meetings to start that process. So we're trying to figure out what preschool programs we should target for data. So we're looking at Head Start. We're looking at early childhood family education. We're looking at some state-funded daycares. And I think I know I have the title of that wrong. We're looking at creating kind of a structure, an early learning structure, so that we can get information about the kind of programs and instructional settings that they offer, but also some information about the kids themselves. So I think the preschool early learning part of this is one of the newest and most innovative things. We have spent a lot of time, and I'll show you some slides later, about the post-secondary part of this. We've been working with the P20 Council for a couple of years to flesh out our ideas. But the preschool is really very much something that we're honestly just starting this year to put some definition to that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm glad Senator Stephen asked that. Hello, Ms. Wagner. Nice to see you. I sit on the Governor's Early Childhood Advisory Council, and we talk about that in the P20 longitudinal grant that we got, that we expected to have a certain amount of that money put aside for the early childhood part. And so apparently, as far as I understand, the council even hired a consultant to work and track that particular. So I guess I'm wondering, number one, do you know about that, and are you working with that consultant? And then the second part of that question is, are you aware of the quality rating and improvement system work where we're trying to have a statewide quality rating system, and will that be folded into this longitudinal data work?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff. Yes, we actually we helped hire the consultant.
Good job.
And thank you.
Madam Chair.
So we are in the process of fleshing out very specific deliverables. I just asked the team yesterday, how are we going to know we're done? So, I mean, this is 3 years out, but how are we going to know we're done? What are the specific deliverables that we want to see out of this project? So we are in the process right now of identifying specific groups, I'm not sure I'm going to describe this correctly because my background is not early childhood, but specific organizations where early childhood activities occur, and we want to get them into something called a central directory structure, so we give them numbers so we know where they are. We are working on getting a student ID dropped down and available for those programs so that we can collect information about those kids. So it's kind of a combination of we want to know things about the program and we need to know things about the kids. And I'm sorry, I forgot your second question.
Madam Chair, QRIS, if you're looking at that.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Bonhoff. The team is looking at that. And as we identify what's important to understand about programs and kids, I believe that work is going to inform and impact the data elements that we're going to be asking those institutions to provide us in the future.
And Madam Chair, and Ms. Wagner, the reason why I mention it is because our goal ultimately is be able to understand if these places that we think are quality places actually are having a positive impact on our children, so we have to tie the rating to what actually happens. And then lastly, Madam Chair, if I might, I had the privilege of serving on the Minnesota Educational Technology Task Force for a year or so with Ms. Wagner, and was just astounded at the process that they use to create these kinds of things. And I learned a great deal about what cross-collaboration does exist all throughout state government to come up with these kinds of approaches.
Thank you, Senator Bonhoff.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Wagner.
Thank you. Let's keep going here. We have a third system improvement goal. The third system improvement goal is to improve our analytics. When you look at our school report card right now, I had a lot to do with creating it. I think our analytics are pretty boring. I don't think we did a good job at capturing specific audience needs, and we also didn't have a good technical tool, a business intelligence tool. So we have a lot of money in this grant set aside to provide better analytics for both MDE K-12, and that will include, I keep saying K-12, but it will include P-12 and the P-20 warehouse. So that's the third system improvement goal.
Madam Chair.
Senator Reeder.
And I guess it's okay for us to continue asking questions. I know you want to get through this, but
Senator Weaver, I warned them that it might be hard to stop you guys. But I think if you're keeping it focused to one, then I think there will be integration. We want to be sure that we give Ms. Gadara an opportunity to present what's happening in Adelaide, too.
Thank you. Madam Chair and Ms. Wagner, for the warehouses, I'm wondering about health and human service integration of data. If we want students to be ready for K, that's everyone supports that goal, and then it's early identification, and that could go much before the preschool screen, which only gets half the students, and 200 or so people born each day, and let's take the Bemidji area, and if for those, let's say someone is at risk at birth, and I understand maybe 7 to 10 young infants each day might be in that high risk. Should we, and I ask Senator Hand, should we be analyzing where public money is being used, and should we have this as a part of the data that's being collected so education through early K-12 and higher, but they're also working with health and human services where prevention intervention is needed. So I just wonder about how that's going to be integrated. I talked briefly to Senator Han, who might share that same interest.
Okay. Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Senator Wigger. It's not a technical problem. From a technical perspective, we can integrate any data set that we have out there. But I would refer you to the P20 model. We spent a lot of time. There's a statute that permits sharing, and I think Anne-Marie, yeah, that was. I didn't see the document, but I think that's part of what you had on there. There's a statute that permits data sharing between MDE and the Office of Higher Ed. They're the broker for MinSKU data, University of Minnesota data, and private college data. And then we also have entered into specific data sharing agreements to capture specific data elements. So when I was working with the Early Childhood Committee this morning, we had talked about getting all of the legislation sort of assembled that directs us to share data. So that would be federal statutes and state statutes. And then kind of understand if there were additional things that were needed. I'm pretty sure we're going to spend some time hammering out data sharing agreements with both health and DHS for selected data elements. So if that's of interest, if those topics are of interest, for the early childhood community, from a research perspective, to be integrated into K-12, that's something that we can certainly handle technically. Okay. This particular slide is a summary of the system goals, system improvement goals, and the particular products that are going to be associated with the system goals. We want to make real sure that we make good use of this money. So System Goal A, which is to improve our state data collections, has four products associated with it. A base infrastructure, which has to do with a SIF pilot, and I'll talk more about that. That's the easing the data collection or data submission, I guess, to the state. And then we have a student, staff, and organization data collection that we want to solidify and bring into the 21st century so they're not sitting back there with my Bose speakers. And the arrows actually mean something. So the product 2, 3, and 4, as well as the post-secondary and workforce labor data, those all feed into the respective warehouses. So the student, staff, and org data go into the operational K-12 warehouse. The data from Office of Higher Ed and DEED and some of the P-12 data goes into the SLEDS warehouse. SLEDS is our acronym for Statewide Longitudinal Education Data System. So it's the name for our P-20 warehouse. And then we also have, for System Improvement Goal C, we have two analytic products. Our Educator Portal is our password-protected website where educators can access personally identifiable data for kids, but it's only available for district-level personnel who have a job-related need to see that data. So we have to. It's protected with Oracle Identity Management. districts have to give staff permission to get into that warehouse to have access to selected data pages, and then you have to have a user ID and password. So it's pretty high-level security. We'll use that same security for the research portal. So any web pages that we do for the SLEDS warehouse will have the single sign-on with the authentication and authorization products as well. So policy drivers. We hear a lot about IT people making technology that no one wants to use. So we want to make real sure that we are in line with policy drivers and that we do kind of market research to make sure that our end users are happy with what we've developed. The main policy drivers here are two state statutes and one federal statute, MS-120B, and I'll go into that, the specific pieces of that in some detail. And then we have some session law from 2009. And then, of course, the America Competes Act. So MS-120B-35 governs student academic achievement and growth. The when of this is July 2011, so we look at that as the state fiscal year 12 publication cycle. So for state fiscal year 12, we publish AYP statistics, assessment statistics, graduation statistics. So probably sometime a year from now, maybe a little bit before, we'll be ready to report these data. We have to report two core measures indicating the extent to which high school graduates are being prepared for post-secondary and career opportunities. And the what, I look at the first one here as count data. A preparation measure indicating the number and percentage of high school graduates in the most recent year who completed coursework important to preparing them for post-secondary and academic opportunities in core subjects. We have another project called the Course Catalog, the Common Course Catalog, and it's actually, we've been working on it for a couple of years. We're starting our statewide training in about 2 weeks on that, and I think that's a real exciting data collection, if you can get excited about data collections. It's going to give us some very fundamental data about what happens in schools. We'll be able to understand course-taking patterns with that, and we'll be able to comply with this statute.
Madam Chair. Thank you, ma'am. Chair, Ms. Wagner, will we have this for each school?
Ms. Wagner. Madam Chair, Senator Wigger, yes, we are collecting it by school and by district. We can disaggregate down. It. I don't know if this comment is, if you need this comment to answer your question or not, but I'll make it. Many districts have a single course catalog. They have offerings that are the same across the district. Some districts have high schools that offer different things, but whichever program setup the district has will be able to show by school which courses were taken. So,
and Madam Chair, will this also be broken down by ethnic background, and if we're looking at what is being done to close the achievement gap, we will have that.
Madam Chair, Senator Wigger, yes. We'll be tapping into our student data system, so any demographic data we currently have about students can be attached to this. So race, ethnicity, gender, attendance patterns, assessment-taking patterns, whatever data we can get attached to the student data can go into these research options. So we have some count data that we're going to publish. We also need to identify a rigorous coursework measure. Again, this is count data because we have to talk about the number and percentage of high school graduates who complete one or more college-level courses, so AP, IB, PSEO, industry certification courses or programs. So that's pretty straightforward, I think. The second part of this is we need to analyze under separate report categories. To Senator Wieger's question, using the nine student categories identified under NCLB and the two gender categories. So that's pretty standard for our data publication. The statute wisely speaks to data privacy. Summary data under this paragraph are separate from and must not be used for any purpose relating to measuring or evaluating performance of classroom teachers. How we're interpreting that is we can provide information at the summary aggregate level about teacher performance, but we're from the state, we're not going into individual classrooms and evaluating mine or Amy's performance in a classroom. So our role is limited to collecting data and equalizing the playing field. A lot of large districts, sophisticated districts, already collect this kind of data and can do this kind of analysis to inform staff development. But we don't have a state of just large districts. We have districts of a variety of sizes, and they don't have access to this kind of information. So we're going to be providing that. The commissioner, in consultation with qualified experts on student engagement, must identify highly reliable variables that generate summary data under this paragraph. I think the highly reliable variables here would be which courses kids are taking. And we have an advisory group, the College and Career Readiness Institute group, that is going through our index of possible courses and identifying which courses we should be counting to meet this statute. So it's pretty obvious. Highly rigorous courses, AP, IB, that's pretty standard. But what about tech prep courses? What about Carl Perkins courses? Should they be included in these counts? How should we think about those? So we have an advisory group that is grappling with the notion of rigor in course taking and will be helping us to meet this requirement here. And finally, any data on individuals received or collected or created are non-public data. So we will not be releasing individual data with these new collections. We have a long history of collecting personally identifiable data on kids, and we have a pretty good track record of keeping those data private and not releasing those data other than to school districts that have school district personnel with a job-related need to understand that stuff. We also have a session law that is directing us to do something in the same time frame, the state fiscal year 12. This one wants us to develop a model projecting anticipated performance of each high school on preparation and rigorous coursework measures to compare schools. Now, the same working group has been looking at some statistical models, but they've postponed the delivery pending the course catalog data that we're getting in this coming school year. So I think that they'll be about a year late with this, but that's just due to data availability. We go now to the federal statute that is driving this, and that's America Competes. This is the first time that I've seen in a federal education-related statute directives to what kind of data systems we need to have as an education agency, what kind of data elements we need to have, and how those data systems should function. So this is a new way of the federal government helping to sort of level a playing field, I think, across states. We have many of these required 12 elements. The elements that are in brown are the ones we're working on with the LDS grant. So I'll go through them quickly. We have had a unique student identifier for a number of years. We have student-level enrollment, demographic data. We have information, K-12, about how students exit, transfer, and drop out. What we're working on with the LDS grant is continuation to post-secondary. We are also working on the ability to communicate with post-secondary data systems, so that's our SLEDS warehouse. We've had the data audit system for a while. We have always had individual student test records. We know students who did not test by grade and subject. We've actually had our teacher identifier for a number of years. That's the file folder number. But what we haven't had until this current school year is the ability to match teachers to students. So teachers come to school to teach kids in courses, and kids come to school to take those courses. So the nexus or the link between those two is the course section. So we'll be collecting, and when I go to talk to districts, I always say it's only three files. we're going to collect a file about what courses are offered at the state, or at the district, I'm sorry, and then we'll collect a student file and a teacher file that will allow us to do this linking. And I have more slides on the particulars of that a little bit later. We will have some selected transcript elements. So in one of my former lives, I was a teacher for a long time. And what I thought of as a teacher, a transcript, I thought I was going to walk down the hall, go into a file, and grab the CUM folder. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about having a student record that has courses taken with grades earned. When I've talked to districts about this, they're excited because we'll have a student lookup ability. So if a new kid comes in and you need to get that kid scheduled right away and the CUM folder has not made it to your district yet because those kind of tend to be a little bit slow, they'll be able to go into the student lookup and see, based on our master index, what courses the kids had. Has the kid had algebra? Has the kid had biology? They're thinking that that will be of assistance to them. We already do some student-level college readiness test scores. We'll be expanding on that, of course. And then the last two, data on student transitions to post-secondary and additional data necessary for alignment. Those, again, are part of the SLEDS warehouse project.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Weiner, sorry to interrupt you. I don't want to interrupt the flow here. But this part of your presentation about the federal compliance with the federal statute, what is the purpose of this? Is this something that the federal government want, data that the federal government wants, or is this things that they think that we should have and so they're telling us to do it? Or what really is the advantage to us to do this? And if we choose not to do it, is there money involved that we would not get if we didn't do this? Or can you talk a little bit about why we're doing this and what the advantage to Minnesota students might be?
Ms. Wager.
Madam Chair, they are asking us, I think they want us to do this because they think that it will give, and this is actually Amy's presentation. I'll do that 2 minute thing here. It's going to give us better education data. It's really going to give us some outcome information that historically we've not had in education. As for the money we'd lose, the stabilization funding, we had to get that a couple years ago, we had to do an application and sign assurances, and we did a number of assurances indicating that we would be able to deliver these things. So at the time we were doing that application, we were indicating that we'd be able to do this if we got the LDS funding. So the LDS funding is allowing us to provide these.
Madam Chair and Ms. Weiner, thank you. So the data that's being identified here, we are not reporting this to the federal government, or we are?
Madam Chair, Senator Hunt, I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your question. Let's see, are we reporting it? Some of it's going in through the Eden collection. Some selected elements have always gone in to the feds as part of the various program collections. But this is not saying that we need to have a new data collection system. So
you would like to interject?
Go ahead,
sorry,
please.
Sorry, I may be breaking all kinds of rules.
No.
Sorry. this was actually put into place. Every governor and chief state school officer in the country, in response, in exchange for getting the state fiscal stabilization funds, had to commit to putting these 12 data elements into play in every state by September of 2011. And that's where these came from. These are basically the data quality campaign 10 elements that you have in front of you that I'll be talking about. So what this was basically an incentive structure for the federal government to put an added political pressure to say, these are vital. We want to send a message to policymakers at the state level that you can't have the policy conversations you want to have unless you build your state systems. It is actually the federal government cannot, by law, collect longitudinal information on individual kids. So what we're talking about is these are state longitudinal data systems that the federal government was incenting to have happen for use by states. And there are many, many laws on the books in D.C. that say they do not want this kind of information. They want aggregated information. And there actually is a belief that will reduce burden for federal collections if states build these longitudinal data systems. It then makes it easier and reduces burden for states to report out in an aggregated way. But in no way, and there's no indication that there will be any federal collections that are longitudinal in nature.
Ms. Wagner.
Thank you. A couple more comments on America Competes. We looked at the elements that they want us to have in a data system. This particular section talks about how those data systems should function. We need the ability to correlate students' ability to successfully engage in and complete post-secondary level general education coursework, increase the percentage of low-income and minority students who are academically prepared, and to inform education policy and practice. So kind of general things there. Specifically, what are we thinking?
Can you move a little quickly?
Yep.
So we're halfway through our committee time, and we'd like to be sure we get it all in.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
What can an LDS answer? What courses can help prepare students for success? How can teachers be most successful in improving student skills? And what impacts do policies have on student achievement? We're also looking at some early warning indicators here. We've got 7 projects, and I'll take them one by one as I go through the slides. Our first project is a SIF project, which School Interoperability Framework. Whenever you talk to people who love data, they want to see data immediate or easily just kind of magically go from the district to the state level. We've built in money for an interoperability pilot that we're going to be targeting to probably 60 to 80 districts. We're looking for large, relatively sophisticated districts who can benefit from this so we can see if we've got a good proof of concept for interoperable data exchanges. We'll be doing student, staff, and organization data. This is my data model, but I'm going to flip through that one in the interest of time here. New data for the data warehouse is our course catalog. I think this is an important one to look at a little bit. The course catalog is not a statewide curriculum. That's a big misconception when we talk about that. It's a master index of courses that could be taught 9-12. Phase 1 is 9-12 for the 10-11 school year. Phase 2 we're going to be looking at for the 11-12 school year, and we're going to go down to P8. It's based in research that goes back as far as 1982. NAEP was the first to pilot this kind of a course catalog. Our Minnesota model currently is based on the National Center for Education Statistics secondary course exchange of data, and it's been customized to fit Minnesota course titles and policy language a little bit. These are the 23 areas. One of the examples of customization is Area 23, Academic and Career Development. That was not part of the national model, but we have a lot of courses that fall into that in Minnesota, so we added that as an option. The blue are the core courses, and the green and red are elective courses. And here's an example of the kind of data that we're collecting. So we want the local course number. This particular course locally is known as Know Your Plants and Animals. This is an actual course. I don't know what district it came from. It best matches our course description of biology. We are asking for the academic level. This one happens to be basic. It's a trimester duration, and it's a 2 of 3 in the sequence. And it does address state standards, or state standards are addressed in this course. Here's another example, the law and you. Again, we have the local number, the local title. This one best matches the legal system. When we talk about matching to the index, again, we're talking about a best match scenario. The index descriptions are probably 3 or 4 sentences max. This academic level happens to be general. The duration is 1/4, and it's a 1 of 1 with no standards. SLEDS, I think we talked a lot about that. It's a joint venture between MDE, Office of Higher Ed. It'll be hosted at the Office of Enterprise Technology and the Data Center. We've got a couple of data sharing agreements and some statute that we've already talked about that made this work possible in Minnesota. I think the biggest thing that we have is a governance structure that comes out of the work done by the P20. This is not the P20 work group, but it's a subgroup. There is a governing body made up of agency heads. There's K-12 representations. Of course, our commissioner is the current chair. The director, executive director of the Office of Higher Ed. We had President Brunix on here, Chancellor McCormick, Commissioner McElroy. So some of those people will be changing with the new administration. We also have a research committee and we have a data committee. Specifically, the governing body will evaluate and consider research and evaluation topics that are brought forth for P20 and approve requests for additional data elements. The research group is responsible for reviewing and developing research and evaluation proposals, and the data group is responsible for reviewing and evaluating proposals through a data lens, making sure the data support the questions that are being asked. We have seven data-driven analytic projects. I'll take point out a couple of them here. We're working with the Board of Teaching on teacher preparation information. They are collecting some new information about licensure, so information about candidate competency, pathways to licensure based on special permissions, so we're going to work with them. The Bush Foundation actually has a 10-year project to study the impact of teacher preparation institutions on graduates. They're looking at some value-added analysis. The question they're trying to answer is, do specific practices in teacher preparation institutes impact how teachers are able to work with students? Do certain things allow teachers to, in their first, second, and third year, really get high-performing results from kids? Or do we have to wait for teachers to get into a system and get acclimated? That's sort of the essence of their work. Early learning, we've talked a lot about that. Understanding the impact of specific course-taking patterns, we'll be able to understand from a state perspective if taking algebra in eighth grade, if that really does increase potentials for success. Another thing we're looking at is early warning indicators. We need to get some information out about kids who might be at risk because of attendance, suspension, number of failing grades. So these are the kinds of analyses that we'll be able to do with this project. And next steps, we've got to complete our contract process, which, of course, is long when we're in the state. Our course catalog collection is starting in about 2 weeks. We are taking a lot of time to work with focus groups to make sure that we understand the needs of our end users. So you'll see focus groups on data collection. You'll see focus groups on analytics. And we also are doing data manager training so that our data managers and districts aren't overwhelmed with the new requirements, understand what we're doing, and get hooked up appropriately with program area staff.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Weiner, I just want to, and maybe I missed it, but going back a couple of pages before the end of your presentation, we were talking about the Common Course Catalog Index and got some examples of local courses and what it would look like. What is this for? What is the value of this information?
Ms. Wagner.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn. We need to meet the two statutes, MS-120B-35 and the session law. We need to be able to figure out which of those courses prepare students for college preparation and which of those courses are considered rigorous. So when we first looked at the statute, we thought, well, this is pretty obvious. You know, AP and IB, those are rigorous courses. But are there other courses that are going to be of interest? What about taking an arts sequence? If you take an arts sequence, does that positively impact your math scores down the road? So we really didn't want to limit the research possibilities with this. So we kind of went broad. And the thing at the high school, to understand what happens in high school so that you can provide information for improved staff development is to figure out how kids and teachers are spending their days so that you can start at developing a context. I think Amy's going to talk a lot about this in particular when she gets into her presentation.
Thanks.
So. Okay.
Are you ready to?
We're
ready. Yes. Good era. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman, and members of the committee. Thank you very much for, first of all, focusing on the important issue of the effective use of data to improve student achievement. And it's an issue near and dear to my heart, one, as the founding executive director of the Data Quality Campaign, which is a national nonprofit organization which works with state policymakers across the country to improve not just the collection of quality information, but equally, and if not more important, the access to this information, and most importantly, its use to ensure that it's being used to inform decision-making and to improve student achievement and system performance. But I also sit before you in front of an unofficial role as a parent of two Minnesota daughters who are in Minnesota schools. So I have a very vested interest in making sure that Minnesota education is as great as it possibly can. And I personally and professionally believe that there's no way we can have a phenomenal education system unless it is informed by quality data. So I thank you personally as well as professionally for taking on this issue and talking about the importance of data. So thank you. And I will take over. Thank you for being my banner. So I wanted to start with a couple things in terms of letting you know what you just heard from Kathy is an incredible story of progress in Minnesota. Minnesota is sitting at an amazing opportunity right now that we have built a very strong quality longitudinal data system. And this is the story of progress over due to great political leadership, technical leadership, that has gotten us the ability, as Senator Bonaf talked about, of really creating some incredible systems. And I just want to highlight a couple things that demonstrate the leadership that Minnesota is playing across the country. One, we have this increased federal funding, which Kathy talked about. Two, the leadership in Minnesota has been consistently looked to as being a leader. This governance council and the governance charter that Kathy talked about is being highlighted on our webpage and other webpages as a model for the country to look at in terms of looking at interagency cross-collaboration and how data can be shared and used across agencies. Third of all, political leadership. Commissioner Segrin and Commissioner Hegard in the previous administration were given the Data Quality Campaign State Policymaker of the Year Awards in 2007 because of this collaboration and breaking down traditional silos and working together. And equally important, it's important to also mention that Minnesota has one of the country's longest and most robust education data systems, which means we're sitting pretty in terms of the ability to follow individual students over time and have an incredible database for doing research, for doing predictive analysis work, of looking at what works in our education system and how we can learn from that. So those are all messages that are really, really powerful and to begin the conversation. And what I want to show you is when we launched the campaign in 2005, we had a very explicit goal of having every state in the nation having the 10 essential elements of a longitudinal data system in place by 2009. What you can see on this chart in the materials in front of you is that no state was close to having that in 2005. And yet in last year's report, we had over 12 states that reported having 10 elements. And this year, we're going to be reporting our updated information on this. And Minnesota, for the first time ever, will be reporting that they have all 10 of these essential elements. That is something to be celebrated and applauded, and is a great tribute to the work that's gone on in the Department of Education and in other agencies to build this. But my message to you today is that will be all for naught if we don't change the conversation from one of collecting information to actually doing something with this information, and most importantly, getting this valuable information into the hands of all stakeholders in education. That means providing timely, easy to understand, contextualized, quality information to parents, to students themselves, to teachers, to administrators, to taxpayers, and to policymakers, so that each of those stakeholders can make decisions with informed information. We are on the cusp of having the education sector become an information-informed sector, like every other successful sector in the world. I mean, the Star Tribune did a story on crime prevention and looking at the predictive analysis of using data points. That's the capacity we now have in education thanks to the building of these data systems. We can use information in such different ways than we have ever been able to before. And part of the reason we have never gotten the results that we want to, I mean, all the stories about being 18th in the world, 19th in the world, last in the world, is because we haven't had access to the information to inform our decisions. That changes today. What the stories that we're going to tell here in Minnesota, but also that we'll release across the country, is that we're at a tipping point. Every single state by September of this year will have the data systems in place to start informing decisions at every point. But for that to happen, it depends on political leadership, and it depends on changing the culture and using data. What we're on the cusp of being able to do is several things. Senator Hahn, you asked about what? Why should we collect this information? I'll give you a couple different examples. One, we provide transparency equitably for the first time ever, that everybody gets access to the same information in aggregate, not personally identifiable information. We actually will know what's happening and what the state of our schools are in a context. Two, we're able to have richer accountability. Rather than having a single test score tell us whether we're up or down, good or bad, we're able to have a multitude of different indicators and measures working together, linking across many of these different systems that were siloed, and be able to have a richer picture of, are we successful? Not just for an academic to know that or a researcher, but as a parent, for me to go into a teacher conference and say, is Jane Gadara on track to being successful in the global economy? Show me the data and provide it in context so I know as a fifth grader, is she on track? And if not, what do I need to do differently? So it's a change in that greater accountability, greater transparency. As Kathy said, reducing duplication of effort and reducing burden on districts and schools rather than being asked to input information 14 times on paper files. By having these enterprise systems, we're inputting data once and using them multiple times, which means greater efficiencies and greater quality of data. And lastly, this is going to inform decision making at every single point, which is the most important part in my mind, that we move from using data for compliance purposes to using it for continuous improvement. And I want to show you that. This is a short history in my mind of how we've used data. From the beginning of time that there was money flowing down the stream in education, there's been data flowing up. But the dirty secret in education is that the data has been low quality. Nobody used it. Everybody knew garbage in, garbage out. No Child Left Behind, love it, hate it, argue with it, reform it, do whatever you want with it. It changed the conversation about data in education. For the first time, we were talking about how are our schools doing in our local community, and we had a data point. And what it did is that it provided us for the first time a rearview mirror of how did we do last year? How are we serving the kids in our neighborhood? Wow. What happened? That's what I call the rearview mirror, that you can look back and see this is where we've been, this is what we need to work on, what's different. That information is only partially valuable unless you take it to then change where you're going to go forward in terms of driving. And that's the true power of the information that we now have in Minnesota, of taking that accountability information, analyzing it, and using it to change how we then go forward and how we educate our kids. How do we tailor education? How do we invest our scarce and ever scarcer resources into programs and curriculum and things that work? And the only way we will be able to make those scarce resource allocation decisions is by using the information that we are now able to get out of our data system. And that's really powerful because right now, rather than looking at cohorts of kids, we can look at what do we know helps seventh grade kids who don't speak English as a first language. This. We can do that analysis of information in Minnesota because we have that long of information to do it. It is a treasure trove of information. It can help not just kids and systems in aggregate. It can also help individual kids with these early warning indicator systems. It is incredibly powerful. It will not come to fruition. It will not work unless you all, as policy leaders, make the system work for your and what your policy drivers are. What Kathy mentioned are the policy drivers need to drive what the system is. This cannot be a system that's driven by the technology people. They've done a phenomenal job and will continue to do it. These systems need to be built for use. They need to be built for use by parents, by taxpayers, by you all. And that's a really important message. And this culture is really important to talk about. And along this accountability conversation, that data for so long in education has been seen as a hammer. It's been seen as a punitive piece, something that's been used to hurt people. It's a test score that comes down. It gets you on the front page of the paper and gets you in trouble. And what we're trying to do is to change the conversation to say, no, this data is a flashlight. It's the most powerful tool that we all have in terms of improving achievement and reducing those achievement gaps. And this is an incredibly hard culture change to come about because it involves people changing their experiences and getting comfortable and trusting the data and feeling like that they're part, that they're owning this data as well. Major, major changes in terms of human behavior. The campaign 2 years ago launched a series of 10 actions that we're encouraging states to take because what we realized is when we did these 10 essential elements that you see in these materials and that you have in your state pages in front of you, is that people saw this as a checklist. Yep, we've got the data system, we're done. And what we realized is, no, that's just the beginning. If you've done the collection, you can have these systems, but you don't use them and that you're not able to link these systems, you're not able to change how stakeholders get information, and you're also not training people to know how to use it, then the benefit of these systems will always be limited. We will never maximize these data systems unless we take these actions to change how these systems talk to each other, which is what Kathy talked about in terms of the linkages and being able to link disparate data systems that have always sat in these silos across Minnesota to actually work for us and to answer the questions we want to answer, you want to answer. And that changing that we make sure we think about our customers different. You know, so often data has only been reported out in a compliance mode of it was mandated by somebody. Somebody told us we had to collect this. It was put into statute. But really what this is saying, wait a second. What does a principal need to have to do his or her job? What does a parent need to have? What does a governor need to have to do his or her job? That's a different way of thinking about this data, and it changes how you share information and how you get it up on a web page, how you make it a demand-driven system rather than just a supply-driven system. Big change in terms of state government, in terms of how we look at our agencies and the role that we play. It's no longer just a conversation about a data person. It's talking about what are we doing for the communications piece at the department and across departments across Minnesota to think about how we're communicating this information in a way that's actionable for people so they can do something with it, not just look at it and have data be the end of the conversation. The data that's presented needs to be the beginning of the conversation, and that's the culture change that needs to happen here in Minnesota and across the country. And finally, this need to build the capacity. One of my greatest fears is that now that we have this data and we're going to start producing people, we're going to expect miracles to happen because all of a sudden everyone's got the data. So much needs to happen in terms of training people how to access this information and how to use it responsibly and use it in a way to drive change. And one of the examples that that's best seen is with our educators. How do we start changing the conversation with schools of education to make sure that no one graduates from a school of education in Minnesota without understanding how to access this information and how to use it as part of their job as being an educator? How do we make sure that it is standard practice in Minnesota that every single that the state has to report back how students are doing of teachers who graduate from different schools of education, so there's that accountability across the systems and that there's that feedback report about why certain schools of education are producing graduates who have more academic value to their students than others. Those are important questions to have, especially when we continue to give resources out. It's part of the accountability and part of the continuation. So this what shows you last year and what we'll be reporting on is that we are not very far in this country with states taking these sorts of actions. This is much harder. Kathy doesn't want to hear this, but changing these actions is much harder than building a data system. Building a data system, as hard as it is, as expensive it is easy. It's an IT issue. These are human issues because it involves people changing what they do, how they operate, how they use information. It's changing human behavior, which is much harder than building an IT bells and whistles system. What you have in front of you is where Minnesota is. I'm actually releasing to you all today, a couple weeks ahead of time, the results from the survey that we'll be releasing nationally on February 16th. So this is up-to-date information, which Minnesota will be reporting in a self-reported survey that Kathy was the point person on, showing the actions that Minnesota says that they're doing, and those are the ones that are in red. So Minnesota this year is reporting that it has 5 of the 10 actions are being taken to start really talking about how do we change this culture towards effective data use. And I'm happy to talk more about all of these. But what I want to highlight quickly are some of the things that I think and from the campaign that we think are real opportunities for Minnesota and for you all as leaders in this state, policymakers, to be thinking about. First of all, as Kathy mentioned, there's this work to connect in this P20, this early learning to workforce connection point, to really bring the workforce pieces in. And Kathy mentioned that DEEDS data is coming into this. But so many of this in terms of the work that's been done about the FERPA and about privacy is so important to deal with. But it's also really important to have those conversations about what data. The earlier conversation about what is P is a really important conversation to happen, and it's not a technical conversation, as Kathy said. It's one of saying, what do we think is most valuable to collect? Why do we collect it? When is it appropriate to collect this information? And these are discussions and decisions that are going to be different in every state depending on the political culture of the state and what people want to answer. I should mention that for the first time, I actually had sent to Greg today, and he'll be getting out copies to you. The data quality campaign was part of a group called the Early Childhood Data Collaborative, and we put together a series of 10 fundamental data elements that should be part of an early childhood data system. And we are releasing the initial pilot survey results on that on March 10th. And I will give to you all, Greg will get out to you all, a written copy of that brochure. But it begins to get to the Head Start issues, and that every governor in the country put together a Head Start group looking at the longitudinal data systems in early childhood. And in our recommendations is, how do you connect these systems together? And again, not build these separate silos, but ensure that these systems can talk to each other when appropriate and that it's serving the needs of the states and being more efficient. So we have conversations on that. The second piece, in terms of the data can be accessed, as Kathy said, is looking at the state report card and how do we make sense of it. In your document, I provided some resources in your packets looking at different ways that different states are changing how data is presented. And I want to highlight one just very, very powerful piece. It's actually in the back of your handouts that I gave, and it's in other materials. And it just, I think a picture is worth a thousand words. When you look on page I'll go down here and just do it right here so you can see it. On the one of the last pages on this. Yikes. This is how data is typically presented. I won't tell you what state this is from. Yes. It could be Minnesota. This is how data is, and it means nothing to parents. They look at it, they see words like AYP, they see things like proficient, they see words that don't have any meaning to them. There's no context in it whatsoever. Let me show you. This is how Arkansas is starting to do it in terms of you put your mouse over it, and it starts showing different pictures. But I'm going to show you one. This is the school view, which Colorado is getting a lot of attention on. And why I just want to take a second on this, and there's a lot of material in your packet that I put on this, is that they actually thought about how do parents take in data and what is something that works. And what they focused on were pediatric growth charts. They said parents understand growth charts. They go to the pediatrician, and they get, my kid's here. And what's important is that there's a natural level of growth and that there's not an aberration and that where are other kids and 90% means something. And they said, how do we start capturing this complex idea of academic growth and put it into a format that parents get and they understand and that they can look and say, how's my kid doing in relation to other kids? How's my school doing against schools that look similar? How's my school looked versus best in class? And again, it's that creative look of thinking about the customers and how we want to take this amazing treasure trove of data and get into the hands of people in a way that makes sense to them so they can make decisions. So there are lots of good examples. We don't have time to talk about them now, but I've put lots in your packets looking at that. But that's the kind of work I know that the department is starting to look at, of how do we change how we get data into people's hands in a way that makes sense to them. So lots of good examples. And again, it's getting away from spreadsheets and getting more into how do things make sense to people. The final piece in terms of building the capacity of this is really important, and this piece around teacher preparation programs. I would encourage you from where you sit to think a lot about how do we change the conversation about educators. So much of the conversation in this country right now about the teacher-student data link, which Minnesota is now able to do, this link of linking the teacher information systems with the student data systems. You know, you read any national newspaper right now, and it's talking about the value-add model. It's talking about teacher evaluations. And those are all important conversations to have, and I know that we're having them here in Minnesota as well. But it's also important to think about how do we use the linkages of those two data systems to better prepare our teachers? How do we use that feedback information in that conversation to say, how do we now provide tailored professional development to teachers to ensure that they are all successful? How do we use that information as a feedback loop to our schools of education? So there's some specific things that I put in here as recommendations for Minnesota to think about in terms of policy levers to encourage that our teachers are having the professional development needed to understand how to use data, but also that we are using data to help provide those professional development opportunities in service and pre-service for our educators. And finally, I just want to give five different things that I think are important for policymakers to think about as we sit at this critical juncture. One is this governance structure. It is absolutely critical that this not be seen as a single agency's job or a single silo. So if we're truly talking about how do we get every single child in Minnesota to be ready for the knowledge economy, to graduate from a Minnesota high school, ready for college and a great career, we need to ensure that that involves every single agency in this country and think about it as a spectrum and not see it as a linear conversation, but as a conversation that people are churning in and out of workforce development programs and they're working while they're in school, and it's not an easy straight line like it probably never was. So the question is, how do we ensure that the data is able to follow the reality of how we're living our lives and how we're getting our education today? We're on the cusp of being able to do that, but the governance structure of how those decisions are made and who shares what data and who sees what data is a political conversation that needs to emanate in rooms like this, and you all need to take a lead in that. Second of all, this issue for common data standards and architecture so that that connection can happen across systems is really important. How do we reduce the cost and make sure that fire hydrants and hoses actually connect up to each other without having a lot of money that does? And again, Kathy's working on that as well with the SIF work. Privacy, 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 cannot underscore enough that when we talk about access to information, it is making sure that it is appropriate access. The only people in this state who need to have access to my children's personally identifiable information about how they're doing in school or anything else are my husband and myself, our kids' teachers, and my kids themselves. Nobody else needs to know about that. They need to know about how fifth grade and second grade girls are doing, but they don't need to know about my kids. And that's something we need to make sure that people in Minnesota know, that when we're talking about access to information, that we're being very careful about the sensitive information and making sure that we're getting aggregate information into the hands of people who need it, while also ensuring that people who need information about their own kids, teachers, and students and parents are having access to that too in a timely way. Fourth, how do we build understanding and demand for these systems? The only way that we're going to build demand for this information and ensure that you all, when you're asked to take votes on cutting budgets, which you're going to be doing this session, that these data systems aren't cut, is to make sure that they're adding value. And the only way that these data systems are going to add value is if they serve people's needs. And that's why it's such an important, we're at an important junction right now in this conversation, because right now I would say I'm not sure if there is value being added by data now sitting in a warehouse at the department. It's full of potential value, but until that information is in the hands of people who are going to use it, all it is potential. And that's the value here, is how do we get it out of the warehouses and continue the great work that and the conversations Kathy are having to meet customers' needs and to provide value to citizens in Minnesota. And along those lines, that is the plan for sustainability. These systems will never be sustainable unless they are meeting individual stakeholder needs, which is vital. My final comments is across the nation and in this state, we are in an incredible place. We have a window of opportunity right now to make these investments actually bear fruit. There's a growing political will and understanding in committee rooms like this around the country. Leaders, senators, governors are having the conversation of saying, we can't afford not to use this information. How do we expedite the use of this? How do we do it responsibly? And we're having these conversations that used to be untouchable. I mean, there were laws in this country that did not allow teacher information systems and student information systems to be able to talk to each other. We're dealing with those. We're having the hard conversations of, should newspapers print teachers' names and their value add? That's a hard conversation to have, but it's a really important conversation to have state by state, community by community, about what information is appropriate to be shared with whom for what reasons. And I applaud you all for beginning to have these conversations on a policy level. So an information-based sector, is it there? I absolutely think it's an attainable goal, and I think in Minnesota more than anywhere else, we're on the road for doing that. We've built the system. We know it's there. But the bottom line is, this is not an IT conversation anymore. This is a conversation about building political will, building political understanding, and building demand, and changing the culture to effectively use data in Minnesota to improve student achievement and to improve decision-making. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadera. You are a rapid speaker, and you crammed a lot in a very short time. Ms. Torres-Ray, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cadera, I'm very fascinated by this topic, and I have a theory that because we do feedback reports and we don't do predictive reports, parents simply, I mean, what parent wants to get a feedback report in a column like the Minneapolis School District puts for me that tells me that both of my children are in the 10 top percentile. And there's 3 pages, and I always wonder how much money they use in sending me that, and then I just toss that. And so how do we move into creating a system that truly does predictive reports and tell me Patrick is taking pre-calculus is likely to go to engineering, and only 10 children in his school are in that path? That calls my attention, right? Versus he's in the 10, top percentile. Feedback reports are not very helpful for parents. Predictive reports are. But we don't do that. We don't do that for the teachers, for the system, for the parents. So how do we move into doing that? Is there any conversation in place that really help us go there?
Ms. Cadera.
Absolutely, and I commend to you a report I just put on. It's hot off the presses. We did a webinar on it, and it actually talks about the five different reports that are possible to do with the longitudinal data system, and they're for different reasons, and a predictive report is on here. And there are states across the country that are starting to do this in terms of showing and making it a very personalized view for parents, saying it's basically providing information to say exactly your point. Patrick is on track. Here's what we know. Or Patrick's going off track by not taking pre-algebra in seventh grade. He is missing the opportunity that he will not be able to be on track to be college and career ready or to put in. And there are all kinds of tools and systems that are being built that are allowing that to happen. And I'm happy to talk to you more in detail about different examples. But in here, we actually have links to several states' predictive analysis reports. And everything that we do with the DQC is online. And what we've tried to do with our website is provide lots of examples so states can learn from each other and not have to start from scratch but can, and not have to reinvent the wheel but take it. But this is a perfect case of why you all need to lead the conversation. Kathy, and you should jump in on this. The Department of Education, I think, is starting to do predictive reports. Is that right? So,
Madam Chair, Senator Torres, we, as you saw in statute, we have some requirements to do them. We just are about 8 to 10 months off of having a solid enough data set to get into that to that kind of scenario. So I think you'll be seeing our capacity increase quite a bit in the next couple of years here. So I think that reports that weren't perhaps possible a couple of years ago are going to start to become possibilities.
Ms. Kadera, just follow up on Senator Torres. How about framing a number of questions? If you frame what she's interested in it as a question, and there are a number of them, and plant those, have you ever wondered where your child is in relation to whatever? I mean, state it in a predictive way, but questions that get at the capacity that you've created and catch their imagination of what is available. Now, it would be parents, but also for policymakers. Mm-hmm. What questions can we ask that will make good use of this data and help to inform our decisions? Because I think it starts with a question.
Absolutely, with permission. I am actually, if you look at our next step document in here that we started, we launched the campaign in 2005 with a series of questions. Before we did anything else, we went out to state policymakers around the country and said, what are the questions that you are now debating? And we actually put those together into 28 guiding questions, and that's how the 10 elements came into being. Because literally, if a state puts into place the 10 essential elements, they are able to answer any of those policy questions and then report out on those sort of things. So if you go into any of our materials, we always start with the policy questions and say, you know, what do we know? Which courses do we actually know put a kid, and grades in those courses, put kids on track to be ready for college, and how do we, and lead questions like that, which are the leading questions. So absolutely everything that we've done with the campaign starts with a question, and I also agree that that's the way to also talk to parents. It's not just, did your kid get an A in biology? It's, what does this course and this grade tell us about his or her preparation for being on track to be successful, to be college ready, and not have to take remediation when they get into college on that. So absolutely.
Madam Chair, I have a follow-up.
Senator Torres.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Guidera, so we know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that. The department knows that. Are we going to do that? Are we engaged in building a system? And I am personally very interested in participating, and I think that you ought to have some kind of a public process to invite, you know, some of the scientists and the analysts that really care very deeply about this to advise on how to do that, because this is a simple matter, really. And now that you receive the funding to do it, I think we have an opportunity to do it, and you know how to do it. You have identified that and articulated it quite simply. So are we going to do it?
That is a question
Ms.
for...
Ms. Cadera.
Sorry, I'm no, terrible
right.
protocol. Excuse me. Sorry, I'm too excited to come in. That's where the leadership of you all comes in. Is I'm a national organization, and it's one of our issues that we say every state should be doing predictive reports and every state should be getting into the hands of parents this information to teachers. But you all need to make sure that that's a priority and that you tell people that you need to do it. And I think that's where the political leadership needs to be, of saying, this is what we value in Minnesota that we think is necessary to change the conversation in Minnesota, or when parents, teachers, advocacy groups have access to the following types of reports. I think that's what's going to make things happen, I believe. I think. So I can't answer that, but I hope so.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Gadara, thank you. I can't help but notice that we built the preeminent education system in the world without any such thing, because we didn't have the technological capability to do it. This is obviously a very intrusive system. Also, I noticed, interestingly enough, as you had the map up with the states that were most likely to have hit a 10 on your scale, were some of the lowest-ranked states educationally in the country. Now, I understand that association does not necessarily imply causation, but I did find that interesting. And I really got to be honest with you, I have a hard time understanding how this complex exchange of information is necessary for a third-grade teacher to teach a kid how to read and write better. I don't understand that.
Ms. Gadara.
So it is, I don't think we have had the results, with all respect, that we should be having in this education system, because we have not had the system. I will speak to this as a parent first. I came out of a very, very competitive district, Fairfax County and Montgomery County in Maryland, and systems that were using data continuously and were ranked top in the country. And when coming here in Minnesota, was basically told, oh, well, we're all, literally, we are all above average. And when I asked, how's my kid doing in relationship to other kids, they said, oh, you can't worry about that because we're all above average here in this. And when you look at Minnesota's scores across the country, that is no longer true. You know, we have had a lot, because of a lot of reasons, have had a phenomenal system, and I'm proud to be in here and have my systems in my kids in these schools. But without the data, we don't know how we're really doing, and without disaggregated data, we are continuing to hide a lot of problems in this state, because we are not disaggregating and talking about individual kids over time and showing this progress. And I think that without this sort of system, those issues continue to be hidden. This also is the bottom line. We've been collecting a lot of information and not using it. What this is an effective and efficient use of data. And I'm not saying collect all things, because there is a burden to collecting data. There's a cost to collecting data if you're not going to use it. And again, that's why it's a political conversation for you all to lead about what do we consider a priority in this state that we need to know to make decisions. And I also can't imagine your all's the job that you all have to do in terms of deciding what programs to cut, how to spend money in the state, especially on education programs, without having data. I don't know how you make that decision without saying, what is the return on investment in this curriculum? What do we know about teacher-student ratio? What do we know about the quality of teachers in terms of being able to look? I'll give you a very specific example that you cannot do things without data. Without the ability of looking at individual teachers and individual students and being able to connect those data points together, you will never be able to know which teachers are able to teach in classrooms that are larger than size 24. We actually now have states that that's what they're doing. They're saying, we know that these six teachers in our school district do a great job teaching in larger classrooms. That's going to be a political reality in most districts in this country right now. How do we find out what those students are doing? So it's about resource allocation. It's about transparency in a system that values choice in our state like we do. Parents need access to this information to make decisions about outcome and in context. So I can't imagine not doing it, and I also think that this is actually reducing burden in the long run, because rather than producing data, which the system requires for funding purposes, is actually producing this data in a way and collecting it once and reducing burden on people.
Madam Chair, follow-up. To me, I'm kind of simple in this way. If the kid gets an A in biology and can't do biology, that's a system problem, possibly a teacher problem, possibly a grading problem. Am I missing something?
So Madam Chair,
Ms. Gadara.
We don't know what that A in biology actually means, because it has never been in context. Without the ability of that information on biology and getting an A in biology, the ability now in Minnesota that it transforms it. That A in biology that my kid gets which I get as a parent on a report card, and I'm like, I have no idea what this means. What does an A in biology actually mean? For the first time ever in Minnesota, because we have the ability to connect that individual student's information, we can now say that an A in biology at Edina High School, that kids that got that grade, also we can look at their score on their AP test that they took in biology. We can look at actually their ACT scores. We can then look at did they require remediation in post-secondary. And if so, if all of a sudden we find that a kid that got A in biology didn't get a very good score on the ACT, didn't do well on the AP biology, and also required remediation, that sends a big message that A in biology didn't mean anything at Edina High School. And it also sends a message too late to everybody of saying, we're wasting a lot of money giving out A's to people when that actually isn't telling people the right information. So it's providing context, it's ensuring that there's alignment of systems, and it's ensuring that there's real information, not arbitrary things such as grades, and that the grades actually are based in a reality, and that there's a check and balance.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am also very interested in the potential of using data to drive enhanced student and learning environments. One of the things that you haven't mentioned that I am intrigued by is the use of technology tools in the classroom and then how we connect the use of those tools. So, for example, the handheld devices where they are able to see just in an instant whether or not the students got it and how they can then differentiate a learning plan. Are you doing any work rolling up that kind of data to give feedback back to teachers and parents?
Ms. Gadara or Ms. Wagner, I don't know which, if it's part of a data element or what.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, we have through a different project, with the Minnesota Education Technology Task Force, we've got a couple of new surveys out. One is the standard technology infrastructure survey aimed at the tech directors, but we have a survey, and before I move off that one will actually do give us some counts of hardware and devices that are actually used in districts. So we'll get a sense of what the lay of the technology landscape is out there among our districts. There's also a second survey that's been developed regarding best practices in classroom instruction. Each of those survey results could be linked with some of the data from the course catalog. I think the course catalog in and of itself doesn't provide a lot of answers. I think what it does is provide context for curriculum to be examined in more depth. We can start crossing these data elements with things that we have from our staff development collection. So we really can, I think, get at some of the context variables that I think we're just guessing at and have been just guessing at for a number of years.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Ms. Gadara, if you have any follow-up on that, but also just tell you I've been very impressed by your presentation. So are you based now in Minnesota?
No, sorry. We actually – thank you. Sorry. I'm terrible with the protocol.
That's all right.
We actually have an office in D.C., and we're based in D.C. I am a virtual person there and end up being more often than not on Delta Rho 7C. So back and forth, but we have a team of about 15 people in Washington that are doing this, and we're busy working in states across the country right now on this.
Okay.
So.
Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It was very interesting. I'm maybe not quite as optimistic as some of my colleagues are. I think what you're talking about is very interesting, and I think it has potential. I'll tell you part of the fear I have or concern I have, and I come from a private sector business, a corporation that has experienced some of these things, development of technology, development of data. This is not an uncommon problem in the private sector. Someone talked about the kind of changes that this requires, and it is significant. It requires people to change. That's not easy. It's easy to build systems, but having them fulfill their use is very difficult. What I am concerned about is that as we do this, that we don't create the focus on constructing the system and gathering the data, which very often happens. Happens a lot in the private sector. The thing that in the private sector that is the salvation of investing a lot of money and time and effort into building these structures and these data warehouses and this technology is that it has to have a practical application. And if it doesn't, companies end up failing and go out of business. I'm not sure that we have that same safeguard in the public sector. for example, someone made the comment that these kinds of data certainly cannot be used to evaluate teachers. I would say that if we don't use it to evaluate teachers, then we are wasting a lot of money and effort to develop a tool. And I would also suggest that by implication, if we don't use this to evaluate schools as a means of making decisions about funding and so forth, then again, we're spending a lot of time and effort to do something that does not have a great practical value. The question, though, is whether or not in a political environment those kinds of decisions can get made. In a private sector world, they can. But I'm not so sure that, and what I fear is that because of that dynamic that exists in the legislature and in the political world, that we will find ourselves getting caught up in developing a very complex, very costly, very time-consuming system of data collection and data management that may not actually have a result. So to the extent that as we proceed down this path, if we can show in the short term practical, positive value, which in my opinion should result in lower cost, then I think that to me this is an effort that should be reevaluated at some point to see whether we're doing that. That's not really a question. It's just more of a comment, an observation. So you can make comments.
Is there a response from either of you?
I would love to respond to that with respect. I couldn't agree more, and I hope you didn't take my comments as saying I absolutely think these systems should be used for evaluation. They should be used for accountability. They should be used for transparency. As a parent, I want to know how my teachers are. I want to know. I mean, I used the example this morning in the House session. I mean, these data systems are the greatest. You can argue it from an efficiency tool or an equity tool. The bottom line is by providing transparency on how teachers are doing and how schools are doing is providing information that a certain class of Minnesotans who can afford to sit at the swimming pool in the summertime and talk to each other have always had access to. Don't let your kid get Mrs. Brown in fourth grade. We are now basically saying this is equal access to this information that all parents should have access to. So believe me, I believe as a taxpayer, this information needs to be acted on and there needs to be accountable. We cannot afford not to use this information. So I hope you didn't take my, I was saying, but there's more uses to it than just for evaluation and accountability. The second piece is an example of reducing burden, and that's why my whole point about sustainability is absolutely dependent on value add. If these systems are not meeting people's needs, there is no reason for them to exist. We should get rid of them immediately and just cut the cost if they are not providing value. I will be the first person to say that as a taxpayer. The second piece, an example of reducing burden, my organization is getting ready to put comments in on the reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. And one of the suggestions that we are making to Congress is that they need to stop asking for all this compliance data. Why are they burdening states? If the real value of this information is to get it into the hands of stakeholders, then the federal government should be able to go on to Minnesota and every other website in the country and pull off and say, yep, if a state can answer the following five things and get information to the hands of every parent in the state about graduation rates, about proficiency, about how well your school is doing, how well your teachers are doing, we don't need to use all those proxies we've used for 30 years, which were compliance data, because we didn't have the ability to create these longitudinal statistics and get them in. So we can absolutely reduce huge amounts of burden on states by putting the onus on the feds to say, yeah, just look at our website. We are actually doing all of this because we can produce this information and get into the hands of people. That's the kind of conversation that we're on the cusp of having, is changing the entire conversation about burden, transparency, and accountability.
Thank you so much for your presentations, and I think we should test what you are doing, and so I've got a little bit of homework for all of you, and that is I'd like to have you each develop a question of some information that you know what the elements, you know what's the capability that's been defined. What is something that you would really like to know that around an issue that we're grappling with and trying to make decisions about, that we could put this system to the test and see if they can actually come up with an answer or the information that we want or need? Let's give it a try. I think then we'll find out, because I think the questions have to be asked, and we should take some time to frame that so that we will get the real information that might be useful to us in deciding whether it's how we invest, whether a policy direction is going a certain way, whatever. Give it a whirl. I won't grade them. But I think it could be useful in our going forward in discussion, because the investment has been made. Now, we've got the skeptics here that, you know, does this work? Will it be meaningful? And that's perfectly fine. There's room for all kinds of attitudes and so on. But let's just see if we can prove Senator Thompson wrong, or write or whatever by the kinds of tests that we put the system to. Are you game? If so, the meeting is adjourned.
Yeah, rhetorical.